This episode is sponsored by Tunbridge Accountants. Are you a creative entrepreneur looking for financial support? Do you need clarity around your numbers or help with decisions related to your business finances? Do you even know what all the numbers mean? Before I worked with Tunbridge Accountants, I definitely didn't. Wendy and Lawton are not just accountants, they're your partners in navigating the complexities of business finance. They make VAT, corporation tax, cash flow management, all of this really simple, guiding you through all the decisions you need to make, whether that's a company purchase, setting up a new business, whether to register as a business. Wendy and Lawton can give you really honest, practical advice on everything. And by letting them take care of your business finances, it then frees you up to focus on what you do best, creating and selling your products. So thank you again to Tunbridge Accountants for sponsoring this podcast.
Welcome to the Bring Your Product Ideas to Life podcast. Practical advice and inspiration to help you create and sell your own physical products. Here's your host, Vicky Weinberg.
Hi, so today I'm talking to Taz from Very Crafty. Taz exists to help all people create moments to feel comforted and included by curating the best products accessible to everyone without compromise ever. So Taz sells two separate product lines in her business. She sells organic teas and also craft kits, hence Very Crafty. And this was a really fascinating conversation I had with Taz. We spoke about how her inspiration for starting the business, how she went about it, and she had some fantastic advice for anyone else looking to start a product business as well. So I really enjoyed this conversation and I hope that you do too.
Ready?
Yep.
So hi Taz, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much for asking me.
Oh, I'm really excited to talk to you. So can we start by you please giving an introduction to yourself, your business, and what it is that you sell?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Tasneem Rotherham, I recently just got married, and I run a business called Very Crafty, in which I sell consciously sourced loose leaf tea and embroidery kits, hence the penny name, I suppose.
It's a great name, and congratulations on your wedding as well. Yeah,
thank you very much.
I really like the name. So can you tell us, how did you come up with the idea for Very Crafty? So how and when, I guess, let's start there.
Okay, so it started, so I've just been in business just over 5.5 years now. And it started when I met somebody who is now one of my best friends at a knitting class that were held in the city that we lived, and we met each other there, and we quickly realized after a few weeks of going to this knitting class we weren't very good at it, so decided to not go to the knitting class but come back to my house, and we would drink cups of tea and watch TV. I think it was MasterChef Professionals is our go-to thing when it was on. And my friend Natalie, she was saying, oh, you know, one day she just said, oh, you know, this is really the life, you know, sitting down with like good friends, good cups of tea, you know, and just relaxing. And she goes, oh, if we had like, you know, something that we could do like embroidery or something, we could be, you know, having tea and crafting. We'd be like, oh, you know, we'd be like crafty, like, you know, very crafty. And I was like, oh, that's a really good name. I'm just going to write that down for no reason whatsoever. And then wrote it down. And the more and more I thought about it, and the more I thought, like, the name was really good, and I just thought that really is like something that without realizing, I think people do, like, they'll sit down and they'll either pick up something that, like, a hobby that they want to do, or drinking some tea and relaxing, like trying to get away from like screens and things like that, and it just makes sense that the two go together, and that's where it came from really, and that's how it started.
Oh, that's brilliant. Thank you for sharing that. And I'm with you as well, because I quite like a little bit of cross stitch and a bit of crochet. And it is nice to just sit down with your cup of tea in an armchair and just do something. And as you say, nice to do it with other people as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's just the, like, even though it can be like quite a solo activity, you can do it with other people, even if it's not the same project. It can be, you know, it's the whole getting people together from regardless of what ability you've got, or, you know, what you've done before, you know, even if you've not done anything like that, it's so, they're and you know, it's so easy to pick something up and just try it, and you know, meeting new people, and especially since we've had so much time of not seeing anybody or talking to anybody, you know, it's a really good time now to like get back into that and engage in doing something like that.
Oh, definitely. And so after you came up with the idea, what happened then? So what did you do? What were your first steps in terms of turning it from an idea into a business?
It's so long ago now. It's really difficult to like go back, and it's really easy to think to yourself, oh, I've not really achieved anything. But when you go back, like I try and look at like old photos and things like that of where I've come from to where I am now, and it's just you know, such a big jump, and you don't realize that because you're in your business. But when I came up with the idea, thinking, right, okay, I'm going to just try and see how this works as a business, the first thing was trying to find a tea supplier. And I knew I wanted like a firm or a company that could help me, that were their ethos was sustainability and ethical and all these sorts of things, because anybody can go to any big company and buy wholesale tea, but you know, for cheap money, but you don't know where it's come from, you don't know how the workers are treated, you don't know if the companies are saying what they do, they're actually doing it, those sorts of things. So I spent a long time looking for those sorts of companies, and particularly when I started off, there were a lot of companies that didn't want to speak to me because, you know, I only wanted to order like a kilo of tea, for example, to start off with, and they're like, oh no, our minimum is like 10,000, and it's like, oh, okay. And you know, it was just, you know, it's a bit soul destroying to start off with, but you just have to just plug away, and then you end up finding a company like I did who have the same ethos. They give 50% of their profits back to the farming regions where we get the teas from. You know, so it's all, you know, holistically, it's all goes in the same sort of ethos that I believe in as an individual, as well as bringing those values to my business. So so that was the main thing where that came from. The craft side of it was a bit more hit and miss to start off with. I started buying kits from other small businesses or other businesses in general, but it was hard. It was really hard and really difficult to explain the link between the tea and the crafting kits when the crafting kits weren't really mine, and the design of them didn't really match with me as an individual and my customers that I ended up acquiring through the posts that I did on social media and stuff like that. So that took a lot longer, but now I've got a range of designs that are a bit out there, a bit unique, a bit more not standard, and you know, nothing that you would find in some magazines potentially, because of some of the nature of the mottos and things like that. So it's a bit more on the edgier side, I suppose. But yeah, that took some time, but we're starting to get a bit of traction now on that, which is really good. So
that's really exciting. And I've got so many follow-up questions from that, Taz, where to start. But firstly, I'll say it's really interesting when you said, you don't feel like you've done that much, because it's interesting. So many people I talk to on the podcast, it's only when they sort of share their story, they go, oh, wow, I've come a long way. Or, wow, haven't I done a lot? Because you're right, it's so easy to just take for granted where you are right now. And I think especially because if the early bit is hard and challenging, it can be quite easy to not forget, but I think maybe block it out slightly. I don't know whether it's conscious or not, but yeah, I think it can be kind of easy to sort of overlook all the hard things you went through to get your business where it is.
Yeah, 100%. And I think because we're so, particularly if you're a business and you're on social media, you end up finding other businesses just, you know, through they come up like if you're on TikTok, you know, for you pages, or on Instagram on the Discover pages and things like that, and you'll see these people who have overnight started a business from zero to like 100,000 or million or something like that, and you think to yourself, well, I say this to myself a lot, and particularly this year it's been really difficult, and I think to myself, you know, I've been doing this 5 years, why am I, you know, I'm not there yet. But then I look back at these, you know, my first like I say in inverted commas, event. It was like a little street party near my house. I had one table that wasn't even mine. It was like somebody's lent me it, with like a tablecloth. Oh no, not even a tablecloth. It was a scarf of my mum's that I covered the top with five different teas. And that was it. That's all I had. Just like five bags of tea. And that's all I had. So now I've got 20 different types of tea. I have, limited edition ones that I have for some of my wholesale customers. I've got like a range of accessories. I've got this whole new range of craft kits and stuff like that. And it's like, those things do take time, and it was more organic. And because I suppose, because you work hard, you know that you've worked hard, but you know the pitfalls, and you know what you've spent your money on and it's gone wrong, or you know what you've spent your money on and it's gone right, and all these sorts of things. And it's just, and it is sometimes really difficult just to think to yourself, well, I don't know why I'm not at, you know, this massive massive company now. But it's been a slow and organic thing, and I think I would prefer to do it this way, because otherwise I wouldn't have learned as much as I have by doing it in such a quick way. Because, you know, even when I started out, even like the, the few like £5 sales that I did, or, you know, an event where I took in total £20 and it covered my table or something like that. If you don't have those like grounding sort of opportunities or, opportunities or, you know, experiences, it's difficult to then when things are a bit slower or you're not growing as quick to realize, because you've not seen the organic growth, I suppose, of it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, like you said, when you look back, I think it's easier to kind of appreciate where you are now when you look back to those days where, you know, you're only making £20 in an afternoon or whatever it is. I think it really makes you more appreciative of where you are, even if you're still not maybe where you want to be ultimately. It's still, you can still measure the progress.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, if you're not seeing the slow growth, it's difficult to, it's also difficult if you don't have that slow growth. It's difficult to see what's working and what isn't working, and if it's just all from 0 to 100 straight away, but there's things that haven't been working, but if something else has taken over and done better, you won't know what, you know, what's taking the money out or taking your time out that you could outsource and things like that. It's I think it'd be a bit more difficult.
Yeah, that makes sense, because you're right, with sort of growing slowly, you can sort of see the impact of every little thing that you do. Yeah. It's really interesting what you're saying about overnight successes as well, because I don't know if you've ever heard me say this, but I'm also not 100% convinced about those, and someone can definitely prove me wrong on this, but sometimes I see someone and I feel like they've come out of nowhere, but then I think to myself, is that just because they've just come up on my radar, but actually they've been working really hard for 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, and it's just that I've just heard about them now. Does that make sense? I do, and I'm not to put anyone down, because there will be people who do brilliantly right from the start and that's amazing, but I also like to say, because I think sometimes we can compare ourselves to people and we think, oh, we should be where they are because they've only been in business 6 months and, you know, they're overtaking me or whatever, but actually that might be 6 months plus 3 years of just slogging away in the background around a day job, but, you know, whatever it is. So I only say that, because I'm not to put anyone down, but just to make people think, oh, I don't know, because I think we can be really critical of ourselves and really, what's the word of, sort of really complimentary of others and what they've done, but we're not always as kind to ourselves. So,
I totally agree. And there are a lot of people who, I agree with that. They've just appeared because they might have just appeared to us, but I saw a LinkedIn post, I think this morning, of somebody who said he got a comment from somebody saying, oh, it's because you were just lucky. That, and he was going, no, but I've done all this. And he listed out all of the things that he was doing. You know, he'd done, 400 hours of training. He'd done, 150 videos over a year, and all these, and all these sorts of things. That's how he's got his quote unquote overnight success. But it wasn't. It was a lot of hard work over, a year or 2 years prior to it, working for him and getting bigger. And I think there's a lot of, I think we're getting a bit more, savvy is not the right word, but looking at and seeing these businesses and people on Facebook and going, that's not accurate, that's not a that's not real, that isn't real to me, and I shouldn't be comparing myself to that. And I, you know, my journey will happen in whatever speed it will happen, and it'll be ups and downs like everything it is in life, and it will work as it will work. And you build the business to what you want it to be based on how you see the success of it going. And I think if you want it to be big, you know, you need to put the effort in and put the work in and make it, you know, and it's a constant thing. But sometimes, you know, I had a chat with my another business friend of mine that we don't, you know, we would say that we don't want these, you know, looking at, you know, like on Dragon's Den with like a 3-year plan and then the exit strategy and all this sort of stuff. We want a business that works for us in our life that we love doing. And that's what it is really, isn't it? So.
Yeah, absolutely. That I feel exactly the same. Like I feel like, I think I'd almost be scared to have an overnight massive success, which is such a silly thing to say. Maybe that's something more to do with my personality than anything else, but I don't know. I think we all have like what success means is kind of different for all of us. And as long as we're happy with our businesses and where we are and where we're going, that's fine. And something else I was just thinking about is that the algorithm doesn't help with all of this, because you find like you see a company, and for me it's mostly on Instagram because I'm on Instagram a lot, and I'll see a company and I think, oh, they look great, and then suddenly you're seeing all their posts and all their ads, and you know, like the way the algorithms work, suddenly like they're just put in front of you all the time. And I think that kind of lends itself to the fact of, wow, they've suddenly come out of nowhere, because you're suddenly just, once they're on your radar, they're like everywhere. I don't know if that makes sense, but I do think that plays into the whole feeling like, yeah, someone's miles ahead of you or whatever it is, because suddenly you can't, you know, turn around about seeing their posts and everything. And I think, yeah, it's just the way like we get shown, you know, we show an interest in something and suddenly we're bombarded with it. But I don't think that helps if you're comparing yourself, because I feel like if you've got a competitor and you know, you start checking them out quite often, you just, all you're seeing is like what they're doing. And that can be a bit disconcerting actually.
I did that. Well, we all do that, I suppose, when we start on social media, like follow people or follow competitors and things like that. And then and then about 2 or 3 years ago, I stopped doing that. I stopped unfollowing all of them, just because one, I was looking at them going, well, how come it's working for them and I've done something like that and it hasn't worked for me? And or you feel like, you know, if you do something and they see it, you know, or if somebody sees it from there, they think you're copying them and all these sorts of things. And I was like, right, I'm not going to do it because I don't like it. It's not making me feel good looking at their content. So I stopped doing it and I started following more people that, you know, either other small businesses in completely different areas that I really admired and have got friends with. And, you know, we share, you know, the highs and lows of, you know, running a business, or you know, and other people, you know, such as yourself and other people that can, you know, have been able to provide advice and things on things that could work, and you know, trying different avenues and things like that. I think it's too easy to fill up your grid with people that are doing a similar thing to you and feeling and it not being productive to how you're feeling in your business, particularly if you're feeling in a low place. Seeing any sort of content that's, you know, that's positive from someone else where you don't know about them and they've just got this overnight success, for example, is not going to help. So I would recommend not following competitors if you can, and you know, just fill it with people that, you know, are inspiring to you or that you like looking at their content and that can help you, rather than trying to compare yourself, because it's, you know, so what is it? Comparison is the thief of joy or something, isn't it? So, so that's what I've started doing now. Yeah, I don't follow any competitors really now.
That's such great advice, because I think most of us at the beginning, we do that. And it sounds really obvious, doesn't it, just to unfollow them. But I think sometimes you don't, because there's almost like a perverse thing in it, like you sort of want to see. But I think, yeah, for your mental health and your all the rest of it, I think unfollowing is brilliant advice. Yeah, I'm definitely gonna take that on board. I think that's you know, I think that's just really sensible for so many reasons. So let's come back to talking about your products, if that's okay, Tess. after you gave this introduction, I had so many questions, wondering where to start. Let's start maybe with your eco policy, because I know that's something that's important to you. You mentioned when you were sourcing your teas, you were talking about only wanting to work with certain types of companies. So should we start there?
Yeah, sure. So like I said at the beginning, that anybody could go, same with coffee, you can buy, from wholesale, like coffees and teas and things. But I was never comfortable buying things that I didn't know where they came from, or that I didn't feel comfortable selling because I didn't know the backstory, or I wasn't sure that the like all the eco policies are there, or the ethical values were there. So and like I say this to all my customers, that I only sell products that I use myself. So I only drink the tea. I only sell the teas that I drink. So it'd be silly for me to buy things and sell them to people if I wasn't comfortable about where they came from and all these sorts of things. So that was a real big important thing for me. So the main company that I use, they're a social enterprise, so they give half of their profits back to farming regions, to get like girls into education and things like that, or another company that are part of the Ethical Tea Partnership, which guarantee fairer wages for farmers and safety standards and all those sorts of things that we take for granted as employees in this country are not guaranteed in other countries. So it's all like a holistic, like whole cycle thing, really.
Thank you. And how easy was it to find teas and companies that fit that criteria? Because I'm guessing perhaps not as easy as if you were just happy to go to a wholesaler and buy whatever they had on the shelf.
It's difficult. And also it's difficult in terms of like quantities and things like that, because it's just me. And, I haven't got, warehouses of space to put lots of tea and things like that. So it was really difficult, but it was a case of doing so much research and speaking to the owners, not just people who are trying to like salespeople and things like that, who were just feeding me like their spiel of things that they were saying. I was like, no, I need to speak to the people who have made these policies, so I can guarantee that that's what they're doing. They're doing what they're saying, and I get updates from the companies that I use and the projects that they've done, and things like that. So it's really, it's really important that it's been upheld and what they're saying is true.
Oh, that's brilliant. And it's great that you've managed to do sort of all of that research. It sounds like you've been so diligent. So I guess it shows that while it might be harder, that it's definitely possible. I think that's great. And so what I was going to ask then was, so are these the companies that you started working with 5 years ago, are they still in the whole the same suppliers you're working with now?
Yeah, we've got like a really good relationship, and because we've worked together for so long, it's quite like a symbiotic thing, I suppose, like in terms of like we're helping each other out and all these sorts of stuff. So the more orders that I get, obviously the more money that I can give to them, and then the more money that they give to their projects and all these sorts of things. So it's really good.
That's great. And that's one thing I didn't say very succinctly earlier, but I guess that was what I was trying to get at, is that I guess you spent a lot of time finding the right people to work with. But if you're still working together 5 years on, it's definitely worth putting in that groundwork right away, because I think it can be so hard when you find a supplier, but they're not quite right. And then you're moving on and you're just constantly cycling through the process of finding someone to work with. Whereas I guess now you've got a great relationship, and yeah, it just makes everything so much easier, doesn't it? And so much more pleasant.
Yeah, definitely. I know when I ring them up, they know who I am and all these sorts of things. And it is really important. And I think having, particularly now, with everything as it is, with getting things from abroad and you know, delays and all this sort of stuff. Like having like a good relationship with suppliers is so important, and you know, being able to speak to somebody, and you know, and you know, if you've got any concerns and things like that, is vital, really. And you know, having that that connection is, you know, is something that you need to just like be mindful of as a business with who you're using.
Absolutely. Now, I'd love to just change subjects a little bit, if that's okay, and talk about your craft kits. I think probably a good place to start is if you can describe for us some of the kits that you've got, because obviously I've been on your website and have a good look, but we'll assume that people listening may not have done yet. Hopefully everyone will go and take a look. So can you just explain, describe some of your kits for you, and then we'll talk about them a bit more.
Yeah, sure. So like I said, like trying to, when I first started and had kits from other businesses, they didn't really like gel with me, and they were quite twee and safe and things like that, and it wasn't really who I am as an individual and where I want the business in terms of both the tea and the crafting kits to like go and the brand and everything. So I was at an event locally and met somebody who was an embroidery artist who was selling her finished items. And like we started chatting and everything. And I said, oh, would you be interested in doing like bespoke designs for my business, for like for kits that I was thinking of coming up with? And she was like, yeah, that'd be great. And all this sort of stuff. Anyway, so started chatting. And so I gave her a bit of a brief and said, you know, I wanted something that they were like quite edgy, but had a bit of like floral things on them. So when you looked at them from a glance, it was like, oh, that's a pretty design. But when you looked a bit closer, it was a bit like, oh, I wasn't expecting that. So, so we came up with these designs. I think we started off with six or seven to start off with. And the kits come with everything that you need. So the fabric's all printed with the design and in colour, the hoop, the threads, the needles, all these sorts of, all the things. But what I like to say to everybody is that it's not really prescribed what you do with them. So you can do as little or as much as you want, and the design will still be, you know, you'll still have like your own bit of art that you can hang up or frame. So it's not, you know, if you don't finish all of it, it would look like a half finished thing. You can just do the outlines, you can just do bits of the colors. So it's really like that being accessible to everybody. So regardless of like your ability, or if you've got you know, issues with like dexterity or anything like that, you can still do things and still have this bit of artwork and have it in your house, and it will still be done regardless of if you do one stitch or, you know, all the stitches. So it's really like, it's, I guess it's as much as you can be, what you call it, like freehand with a design that's already been given to you, if that makes sense. So,
yeah. So I guess the design was printed and you just embroider over or around or however you choose to do it.
So it's pretty much you've got creative control, but the design's already there. So it's, so, you know, you don't have to do stitches that are, you know, some of them are really hard. I find really difficult. So like French knots, they can be a bit annoying. So if you don't want to do French knots, you don't have to, you know, it's not like a design that says you must use this stitch for this, 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 and this. So.
Oh, that's really good. And so you had the designer to help you design them to your brief, but what about sort of sourcing all the bits that make up the kit? So the thread and the fabric, how have you managed to pull all of that together? Because to me, it sounds like a massive job. Because I've got a few of these kits, not yours, but I've got a few cross-stitch kits before, and you get quite a lot in a cross-stitch or embroidery set. So yeah, how have you gone about that?
Yeah, that was also very difficult. Again, it was, I was trying to be mindful of where I was getting the products from. So all of the products come from businesses that are based in the UK. So it's all part of the, I guess, like, circular economy, I suppose. So it's all trying to you know, every time you buy a kit from me, you're helping other businesses that are in the UK as well. So it's so that was like really important, because again, it's another relationship that you can have with them. And, you know, and it might be, you know, it might be a big company that you're dealing with, but you're still part, you know, you're still part of that, and they're still a supplier to you. And, you know, that relationship is still really important as well. So,
yeah, that's great. Because I mean, there are so many different elements, aren't there, that make up a kit? And are you able to source them all from one place? Or are you sort of getting everything from different places and having to physically pull the packs together?
Yeah, unfortunately, at the minute, it is different from different places. But it's to try and get like the best of everything from everywhere. Yeah. So, which it's fine. It's like, once again, it's the same with everything. Once you start, it's really difficult trying to find it. But once you know what it is, it's very easy to reorder, and you know what you're getting, and you've got like the list of colors of threads and things like that, so you know which ones they are, and that sort of stuff. So it's just yeah, it's just the beginning bit is always more painful at the beginning, when you just think, oh, I've got to really got to sit down and order these. But once you've done it, you know, you've got like a, you know, like a robust like spreadsheet of what you need, and you know, where they're coming from. It's just a case of referring back to that the next time and ordering it again. So yeah, it's just the initial part of it, really.
That makes sense. And I guess some of the elements, like hoops for example, are going to be standard throughout whatever pack you order.
Yeah, exactly.
So is it a really, I hope you don't mind me asking this, but is it a big job actually physically putting the packs together?
It is a little bit, and it's, but once you get like a bit of what you call it, like a production line, so I have like all the boxes that I make up, and then I put the tissue paper in each one, the instructions in each one. So it's just like you're just doing that over and over again, and you just have some music on in the background, and you just kind of just like work your way through. And that, I did ask my husband once to help me, and it got too complicated, and so I just started shouting at him, so I asked him to leave. I was like,
yeah, it sounds like the sort of thing. Yeah, I think I would, if it were me, I would definitely be wanting to just, yeah, get on with it on my own. Sometimes other people aren't as helpful as you think they might be. I don't know why, though. There's part of me that thinks, oh, putting together that sort of kit must be really fun. And I don't mean to sort of disregard all the hard work that goes into it, but is it fun? It sounds to me really fun sort of creating a craft kit.
Yeah, it's nice that once you, because like there's 10 things. Yeah, 10 things that I need to make sure I put in there. So it's like literally just going like, you know, counting them all out. And once you've got them all, it's like folding it all up, putting the tape on, putting the label on. That's that. That can get stored then. And then it's the same for the next one and all these. Yeah, and all this. It's annoying, though, when you're in the rhythm and then like you need something. So like so I have like a bit of backing felt that I add in each one. And then if I've run out of the squares, I'll need to go and cut some more. And it's like, I don't like it when I'm stopped midway. And I'm like, oh. And then so I'm like, right, stop, get the big table out, get the felt out, get the measuring tape out and things like that to measure it all. So to cut it. But yeah, but once you're in the rhythm and once you're in the flow of doing it, it's like really quick. And it's just, you can just put the music on and you don't really have to think too much about it. You just, because you know you've got 10 things to put in there, you just make sure you just pick the 10 things and that's it, really.
I do think it sounds and also I guess also the thought of like you're creating these sets yourself as well. I just think that's just, I don't know why, that just makes me feel like it's such a joyful thing to create, like something that someone's gonna take and make something with.
Yeah, it's really nice, especially when I get like photos from people who've sent what they've done, or you know, now or I'll get messages like saying, oh, I didn't, you know, I did only this bit, you know, I didn't get a chance to finish it. And I was like, oh no, but it looks, that's all you want to do, then that is finished. So you know, so it's really nice getting comments and like messages from people about, you know, saying that they haven't, you know, picked up embroidery for so long or ever, and they've got this, you know, piece of, you know, work that they've effectively done on their own. And it's, you know, it's a very proud moment.
Yeah, you should feel proud. And I think it's nice that, like you say, the designs are printed, so they are accessible as well. So like anyone presumably could just pick one up and give it a go.
Yeah, you don't have to. Yeah, the worst thing about having a design is the tracing out of it, you know, sticking the paper against the window and putting the fabric on the top, or having a light box and all this, and, you know, and all this sort of stuff. And sometimes you just want to get on with it. You just want to put the fabric in the hoop and just start sewing. But particularly if you're a beginner as well, you don't want added stress of like doing things like that, and it can be a bit messy. And if it's, you know, if it's not, if the pen doesn't come out with like washing or things like that, and it leaks and all that. Yeah, I was like, no, don't want any of that to any of that drama to give to anybody else.
Oh, so it sounds like you designed this to make them super easy.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's basically what I would do. It's like, what would I want in a kit? I wouldn't want a tracer, then therefore no tracing.
I never even thought about tracing because I've never done it embroidery. I've only ever done cross stitch.
Yeah,
that's kind of, I feel like that's my limit because I can count crosses. So I feel like, do you know what I mean? I feel like I can count, so therefore I'm good. But the thought of actually having to do like real stitching, I'm. Yeah, maybe one day. I feel like it's beyond. Maybe I should try one of your kits because actually it sounds like I couldn't go far wrong.
No, exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, my best friend, she did one. So like when I go to events, I have finished ones as like a display, and I purposely gave them to people that had never stitched before or hadn't stitched for a long time. So my best friend, she did one and she's never stitched embroidered before. I gave one to a neighbor of mine. She hasn't stitched for, you know, like 20 years or something, and she did one, and you know, it's really, and you know, and her son did one. He's never done embroidery before, and they're, you know, I have those as like my display ones, and you know, and it's, and so like I tell people, and they were like, oh, you must have taken ages to do these. And I was going, oh no, it's not actually me, that, because it's pointless me showing what I can do because I've been embroidering for such a long time, but it's what it's showing people that look, the, you know, this is the range of people that have done them and their varying ability, and look what they've produced. Look, and I've got these out on display because they're so nice. It's not like I've been giving them and going, oh my god, these are awful, and then like throwing them away. But they're, you know, they've picked it up so well, and they've done such a amazing job. I've, you know, we display them, and their photos on my website are the ones that they've done as well. So so anybody can do it, and anyone can pick it up. Definitely.
Well, that's brilliant, and it's great to share that as well, because as I say, it makes it so accessible to people. And talking of the pictures on your website, well, see, what's really hard, obviously, is this is not visual, but why don't you, just so people can get a sense, because I loved looking at all of these on your website, so people just get a sense of what you offer, why don't you describe for us just one or two of your favorite designs? And don't worry about what you say, because I can always put the explicit filter on if I need to. If you're worried about that.
So I've got a couple. They all range in their complexity, I suppose. But one that I really like is that I've got one. It's really easy, and it says like tea ? Obviously, and it's got like little tea leaves around the outside, which I really love stitching. I really like the one we designed last year. Because every year I get asked about, in January particularly, about detox teas and things like that. And there's, spoiler alert, there's no such thing as a detox tea or detox coffee or anything like that. And so so I do a big post about that on social media, and it's my best performing post every year. And so I did an embroidery kit about saying that nobody cares about your diet, because there's so much, particularly in the new year, there's so many people going on and on and on about their diets and things like that. And not saying that you're not, you know, not saying what people are doing things for, you know, health reasons or whatever is should be, you know, not commended, but you know, that it's a lot of negativity, particularly for people who have got, you know, issues around eating and things like that. And it's, you know, a lot of negativity about it, and you know, and there's a big movement about body positivity, but in January, no, you know, you must hate yourself in January because we've had a nice Christmas, for example. So that one was quite well received, let's say. And so that's one of my favorite ones as well, because it's quite an important one to me, and a lot of my friends that have become friends now that are, you know, that really like it, and the message behind that one. So I really like that one. And then one of my most popular ones is, and one of the reason why it's so accessible is the My Love Is Love one, and my little rainbow and things like that. Everyone, yeah, that always seems to sell out, which is really nice. So a lot of people have got that one and have hung it up and things like that, and so that's really nice too. So those are my favorite ones. I love them all, but those are my favorite ones.
Oh, thank you for explaining, because I just wanted you to explain them so people got a bit of a sense of what they are. Because when I looked, I thought, well, they're not your traditional embroidery kits that you think of, like you said, because you think of embroidery, you think of flowers and birds and butterflies, and yours are really pretty, but they're a little bit edgy as well. So that's what I wanted to try and convey. And hopefully people will go to your website. So do let us know your website address now. This is a good time to actually tell people your website so they can go and have a look for themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can you can buy all my products on tea and craft kits all from my website, which is verycrafty.co.uk.
Amazing, thank you. And I'll link that up in the show notes as well, but I thought it's quite good to give it a mention here as well. And also link to your social media accounts and everything else. So the final question I have for you, Taz, if that's okay, is, and it's one I ask everyone, is what would your number one piece of advice be for other product creators?
Oh gosh. That's a really good question.
Well, I leave it till the end because it's tricky.
Yeah, it's into a false sense of security of it being, oh yeah, this is nice, and then the hard-hitting question. I think the main thing is getting your numbers right. I can't stress this enough about everything. So I have this spreadsheet, and it's, I don't know, I think it's about 27 columns long or something like that, and it goes through every single bit of cost that it takes for me to produce either a bag of tea to sell or a craft kit to sell, and it talks about bags, labels, processing costs on the website, my website's through Shopify, so it'll the cost that Shopify take per sale, postage, how much PayPal takes, all these sorts of things, and it all works, and I've done it every single point and then work out how much it costs to sell that before I end up with a price. I didn't do that for about probably 3 years. I hadn't had that, and I worked out that I was selling things cheaper than it was costing me to make it, which is not really a good thing when you're in a business. So if I could start again, that would definitely be it, because it's obviously you don't get into the thing that I was, that you're not selling things cheaper than what it's costing you to get and make. Two, it you'll be able to build in quite a nice margin or profit for you as well. But also, like, three is like you can build in potential uplifts in costs that you might incur from, over the pandemic, like nobody could get cardboard boxes, and cardboard boxes that I was buying for 30p went up to like £1.50 each, and it was, all these sorts of things. And it was, you can take a little bit of the hit of that for a small amount of time, but not if it was for forever. So it's, you can work out, you can change, small amount of figures, your figures in this, in your spreadsheet to say, if it did go up 1,000%, how much is that going to affect the, what I end up getting, or, will I have to pass that cost on to the consumer? And how, if I do, how do I, explain that to them? How do I mitigate that if I can, or all these sorts of things? So yes, my one piece of advice would be to make sure your numbers are correct, because it will save so much heartache and headache later on when you have to keep upping your prices because you've not factored that in until the beginning.
That's such good advice, thank you. I especially like your spreadsheet, because I think it's gonna be so easy to forget some of those little costs, like the PayPal fees. In the beginning when I was selling my products, I was definitely similar. I had the big costs worked out, the production and the shipping and the storage, but then those little things like the PayPal fee is a great example. It's not a massive amount of money, but it all just adds up. And so I think thinking of absolutely everything is really, really smart, because that must have been horrible to realize that, I'm selling these at a loss. But good for you for like working it out though, because I think it could have been all too easy to just kept on going. Especially because numbers, if it's not something you feel like you're good at or you enjoy, it can be so easy to just kind of put your head in the sand and, just hope for the best.
Yeah, definitely. Even, you know, even like little things, you know, like stickers. If you put a sticker on something, that costs money. If you know, even if it costs you like 3p, that's still a cost to you as a business. It's, you know, I've really gone to like the nth degree, because I was thinking, you know, I thought as soon as I worked it out that if something did happen and everything went up, what would that affect? You know, because I don't want to increase my prices if I can help it for my consumers, because it's, you know, times are difficult for everybody at the minute. And so it's trying to mitigate these sorts of things. Like, you know, can I, you know, if I don't put a sticker that says my business on the box, is that on the outside, is that really going to make a difference to the person who ends up receiving it? Probably not, but that will save the money, you know, over X amount of packages that are being sent out. But you know, those sorts of things. It's just looking at what you're doing, and it's not a freebie, I suppose, to just think, oh, you know, this little bit of, you know, this, you know, this sticker, this tissue paper, it's not free, it isn't free for you to put in, because you've had to buy it. So it's all the little things that just need adding, that need costing in and looking at. So so you know exactly what it is, and you know how much it is, and you're more comfortable then knowing, you know, more confident in what you're selling and confident in your price. If somebody says to you, oh, that's really expensive, you can say to them, well, this is what you get included in, you know, in a craft kit, or this is what you're paying for in the tea, as well as, you know, the fact it's consciously sourced, blah, 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 all those sorts of things.
That's really good. Thank you. And I also think that, as you've explained, it's great to know your cost in that detail, because should something happen, like the cost of your boxes gets more expensive, then you can make a really informed decision. Do I pass it on to the consumer, or can I cut costs somewhere else? And as you say, if you've got all those costs detailed, you could go, well, the box price has gone up, but could I buy cheaper tissue paper, or could I not put a sticker on, or could I do, I guess it makes it much more actionable to kind of think about, okay, how, you know, how do I tackle this, or do I just swallow up the additional cost or whatever? But at least if you've got that degree of detail, you're making a really informed decision rather than just let things happen to you.
Yeah you've got more it is about having control, because when things go up and you haven't got it all written down, and you don't know where it's all, and you don't know how it affects everything, you feel like you're floundering, because you feel out of control. But when you find out something is going up and you've got it written down, you go, okay, how will that affect me by this going up by this much amount of money? And you can do, and you can play about with the figures for, you know, just in case things as well. So it is all about having control. And it's, you know, and it is horrible and it is boring and it's not as fun as designing stuff and making things and stuff, but it's such a fundamental part for you to be able to do all the fun stuff that it needs doing. And that's, you know, I can't stress that enough that, you know, everyone should really focus on doing that if they've not already been doing it.
Yeah, I love this. I'm absolutely sold, and I agree. I think anyone who isn't doing this already, I think it might be quite a painful thing possibly to do, but I guess once you have it, it gets, like you say, it gives you so much control, you can make really informed decisions. So I definitely think it's worth the sort of couple of hours of pain that it might take you to actually get it done. But I'm so impressed. My accountant would love you. I'm so impressed that you like have everything down to that detail, because it's, yeah, I think it's exactly the level of detail you need when it's your business.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that's definitely like one of the key takeaways in this episode for me. I think that's a brilliant sort of actionable piece of advice. People can just go away and do that if they're not already. I'm sure lots of people are, but if you're not, I think that's a good reminder to perhaps take a look. And yeah, thank you for everything that you've shared. I've loved talking to you, and I really hope people go to your website, take a look at your tea, take a look at your crafts kit, and as I say, the link will be in the show notes for this episode to make that really easy.
No, great. No, thank you so much for inviting me. It's been really nice chatting, and it's nice to, you know, look back, you know, think back about, you know, where I've started to where it is. And I hope that people who are in a similar position or thinking of starting or growing their business, this has been helpful to them. I'm always happy to chat if anyone wants to drop a message about business or anything or about tea or anything like that. I'm always happy to chat.
Oh, amazing. Thank you so much, Taz.
No, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for listening right to the end of this episode. Do remember that you can get the full back catalogue and lots of free resources on my website, vickyweinberg.com. Please do remember to rate and review this episode if you've enjoyed it, and also share it with a friend who you think might find it useful. Thank you again and see you next week. Hi, this is just a little note. Say if you've enjoyed this episode, or indeed any of the episodes, and you would like to, I don't know, buy me a coffee or something, you can actually now leave tips. So there's a link to how to do this in the show note. Of course, do not feel obliged to do this. This is a free podcast. This will always be a free podcast. But as I say, if you want to buy me a coffee, you can do that via the link in the show notes.